Chuck Arduello. This is TobeAboutIt.com coming to you from our studios high atop Tbilisi's chilly Rustaveli Avenue. Today is Thursday, the 17th of January, 2013. On this date, in 395, the Roman Empire is redivided into an eastern and a western half. In 1904, Anton Chekhov's The Cherry Orchard premieres at the Moscow Art Theater on his 44th birthday, by the way. 1929, Popeye the Sailor Man first appears in the Thimble Theater comic strip. 1945, Swedish diplomat Raoul Wallenberg is taken into Soviet custody while in Hungary and is never seen again. 1950, The Brinks Job. 1953, the Corvette is unveiled at the GM Motorama.
What was The Brinks Job?
The Brinks Job is the most famous and excellently pulled off robbery in American history, in which a couple of million bucks were nabbed from a Brinks truck, I think in Boston. In 1961... American President Eisenhower warns as he leaves office in his farewell address of the military-industrial complex. On that same day, as if trying to tell us something about that very same military-industrial complex, former Congolese Prime Minister Patrice Lumumba is murdered with the assistance of Belgium and the United States. And on that exact same day, Maya Chibrodanidze, Grandmaster from 1978 to 1991, was born. Other birthdays today are Michelle Obama, Muhammad Ali, Jim Carrey, Benjamin Franklin, and, as we said, in case you weren't listening already, Anton Chekhov.
All pretty good people.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. No bozos in there. Cameron's traveling today, so it's just me, Mark Mullen, along with Matthias Hooter. Nothing we say can be associated with any of our employers, past, present, or future. Thanks again for posting on our forum. If you'd like to comment on the blog or ask a question, go to tobeilpod.com or send us an email at tobeilpod@gmail.com and let us know how iTunes is working. So, on Saturday, this past Saturday, Chairman of the Parliament, Dato Supashvili, signed the amnesty bill into law. Following day, 190 political prisoners were released, including Nino Borjanadze's husband, Badre Bitsadze, soccer player Georgi Dimitradze, anti-Misha activist Levan Gogichaishvili, pundit Vakhtang Maisaya, and members of the far-right Orthodox Wacko group who attacked the TV Kavkasia station staff during a live broadcast in May 2010. Prison Minister Sosar Subadi said the prison releases went smoothly and that all the cases, including those of people convicted of spying for Russia, were studied thoroughly to ensure that those amnestied were innocent. Misha again criticized the amnesty move, stating that since Georgia is releasing Russian spies, the government should have at least exchanged them for prisoners serving time in Russian prisons for spying on behalf of Georgia.
That seems reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
if that is the case, I didn't know that there are Georgians in a Russian jail for that.
I have not heard about that, and you know, and which of them or the ones here were falsely accused. Chair of the Human Rights Protection Committee, Besalaya, said that cases of the political prisoners will become public and that UNM and Misha will have nothing to talk about. Today, Misha awarded an officer of the Ministry of Internal Affairs with the Order of Honor because she resigned on Monday in protest against the amnesty. The prison ministry has begun sending other amnestied prisoners cases for people whose sentences are to be reduced to the court for a final decision. The court shall receive the cases of nearly 18,500 inmates in the next 4 or 5 days.
And the human rights envoy of the German government made a statement about the amnesty bill, and he said it's a great step in the right direction. They are very pleased about this and that all these political prisoners are finally released and that the civil society was involved in all steps of this process and that this is a great sign that Georgia has finally become an electoral democracy, which raised some questions.
Was he aware of the Gaila walkout? Or?
Exactly. Was he aware that the two NGOs that were involved in this process initially stopped cooperating because they thought there was no room for an actual evaluation of every case?
What's going on with the German, ministry of what was it? Was it foreign ministry?
No, I think he was the government's human rights envoy.
Huh. Well, somebody in the German embassy blew the briefing on that one, I guess. The prosecutor's office launched a criminal case against the former head of the military police, Megis Kardava, and other officials for humiliating citizens, acts of violence, and abusing authority. They spied on German homosexuals and collected sex tapes.
Georgian homosexuals.
Georgian homosexuals. Yes,
not yeah. German.
Did I say German?
I think so.
No, I didn't. You're just too sensitive. Did I really? Well, our listeners will know. Yeah, I don't know. Although you never know. They were pixelated. They collected sex tapes, let me just say that again. They collected sex tapes, with which to blackmail them into cooperating with the government. The state rented out apartments, equipped them with illegal surveillance cameras, and got so-called confident people, individuals working on behalf of the government, to pick up these gay men and have sex with them.
I understand that these people were coerced into kind of cooperating. I don't think that they were like voluntarily.
Yeah, I can imagine. The prosecutor's office has obtained several such videotapes. Though there are supposedly dozens more. While three of the four high-ranking officials were detained, the judge, the Tbilisi Civil Court, released all three on 20,000 lari bail. The fourth, Kardava, was sentenced to 2 months pretrial detention, but he's not in Georgia. Several NGOs, as well as the Ombudsman's Office, criticized the prosecutor's office for releasing the pixelated gay sex videos because it further promotes homophobia, NGOs say, and people can be recognized in the videos. Chief Prosecutor Archil Vilashvili defended the release of the footage, saying that it was necessary to show how sick the previous government was.
Yeah, and the question is really why the government had to release those tapes. And they released them in a way that you can recognize the voices, and if the person in the tape is a close friend of yours or a relative, then you can probably recognize them. And apparently the videos, I didn't watch them, I have to admit. Apparently the videos were also showing a lot of the sexual acts, and they were aired during prime time without appropriate warning, and that is also a problem from a media law perspective.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to know which is worse. I mean, obviously, the coercion involved of trying to blackmail people by filming this is horrible. But, on the other hand, I mean, the new government, finding these things and really fairly immediately putting them up on air, I mean, I think really... really just shows that that it's not
thought through.
Not only that it's not thought through, but it's that they're saying that we're different. They're not so different, really. I mean, frankly, it's such a clear violation of the rights of those individuals, and in such a way with that being such a big topic right now that it's. It's really a crummy thing to do from a lot of different directions, and they're the ones that are in power right now. I mean, the former government, yes, they did that. They could have said, that this happened. It could have gone to trial.
Right.
It would have been a big trial. But it was
in the courtroom only. To people who really have to see any of that.
Yeah.
And there were also, I mean, maybe to put this into perspective, I think nobody really knew about that, or that was not something that was widely discussed. But there were at least two cases in the past years where journalists said they came out that the Secret Service was trying to blackmail them into becoming spies for the government by using their sexual preferences against them. So there was one journalist in Batumi for Batumi Levi and one this summer for the Ninth Channel who said, we're gay and they tried to use that against us.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, it really shows both sides in a pretty horrible light. The government suspended privatization of agricultural land plots so that a special government group can develop a unified land code to replace the current messy legislation. The group will complete their work in several weeks and introduce a new draft.
And the Minister of Agriculture in the past week also said that the government is planning to set up a fund that will basically pay interest for farmers. So if farmers get a commercial loan in Georgia that is like 12 or 15%, very high and doesn't make sense for small farmers, that the government would reduce that interest rate to 3% and pay the difference. And they said that they had already met and talked with international banks, including French Crédit Agricole, the Dutch Rabobank, and the Austrian Raiffeisen Bank, about setting up a special agricultural cooperative bank in Georgia. And what is interesting to know is that Raiffeisen is a big conservative Austrian bank. They bought Ivanishvili's Russian bank a few years ago for $500 million. And they are also Ivanishvili's house bank. So he has an account in Austria and one in Russia where he has some cash in this bank. So, I mean, I think...
Some cash. Quite a bit of cash.
It's actually not much. It's like $20 million. That much. Right. Or less than that even.
Spending money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Well, that sounds like interesting plan. On Friday, former Defense Minister Irakli Okoroshvili was released on 25,000 lari bail. That same day, the Tbilisi City Court began hearings concerning the Defense Ministry's buying of poor quality ammunition under Okoroshvili. The court accepted the petition to release him on bail based on his voluntary return to Georgia, his cooperation with the court, and given that the majority of witnesses in the case have already been interrogated, meaning that he would not be able to exert pressure on them. Today, Okoroshvili testified before the court regarding his time as head of the Ministry of Internal Affairs.
And I understand that several of the witnesses have kind of withdrawn their accusations, which mm-hmm. also looked a bit sketchy to me,
yeah.
given the public reputation which Okoroshvili had. And I think there was not really... Not many people in Georgia believe that he didn't do anything that was outside the legal framework.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, on the other hand, I mean, the concerns with him were fairly political. I mean, it was a little bit frustrating to say that, you know, he was, to have the government say that he was corrupt or that he
right.
was, you know, whatever else, when everybody had been saying that for 2 years, you know, at least. Because he was an ally of the regime, you know, nobody really worried about that.
Right.
And then it just, you know, the turn happened immediately. Misha appointed Tengiz Gunava, former head of inspection at the Interior Ministry, to the position of governor of Samegrelo-Zemo-Svaneti region. Gunava was recently arrested but was later released on bail. If you'll remember, there was some drugs or something that were planted on him that he didn't have. Misha personally presented Gunava to staff members of Zugdidi Municipality, where he claimed that, thanks to the new government, old, meaning Shevardnadze-era, staff members who dirtied their hands with corruption and smuggling have returned back to their posts, end quote. Misha also appointed Khatuna Ochiauri as governor of Mskhetem-Tianeti region and Andro Barnovi as governor of Shidakartli region. Both are former UNM lawmakers. Barnovi was most recently dean of the Faculty of Social and Political Sciences at TSU.
And our Californian at BillPod.com contributor Cameron was in Zugdidi today, and apparently there were pretty big protests in Zugdidi that were organized by what appears to be the Georgian Dream, and there were some Sviatist flags. They were basically protesting against the newly appointed governor.
Hmm. Yeah, this governor situation is a little complicated because, in fact, the governor doesn't really have a whole lot of power, but informally, you know, has sort of had importance. In the past, the governor was, you know, the president's representative, and since Georgia is unburdened by any particularly serious local government legislation explaining, you know, who's got what powers, and frankly, it was it's the big man's representative that tends to run things. At this point... I mean, you know, with the changeover of power and cohabitation, not really sure what they're going to do, but certainly gotten in the news that they're moving around.
And I understand that the governor is not even like a role that is mentioned in the constitution. Like, there's no actual framework for the role of governor, because you have the Sacrebulo and the Gamgebeli, but then there's the governor who's like this undefined somebody.
Once again, bringing out that Georgia is in desperate need of serious local government reform. On Monday, Justice Minister Teo Tsilikiani denied UNM accusations that her father gives her advice on legal matters. Tsilikiani's father was a judge between 1991 and 97 and issued 20 death penalties, some of them soon before the death penalty was abolished in Georgia. UNM claims this is a very high number. Tsilikiani declared that these accusations come from Misha, who is trying to discredit her, since as Justice Minister, she's the only one that has the right to arrest him.
And somebody this week, that I think issue came up because some opaque media outlet published the names of all the people who were sentenced to death by her father. And I think it's, you know, like, she's the daughter. She's not responsible for whatever her father did. But it's kind of a smear campaign, I would assume.
In Parliament, special commissions are discussing two amendments to the Constitution, one which would restrict the President's authority, the other which would move the Parliament back to Tbilisi from Kutaisi. As we talked about a couple weeks ago, if the First Amendment goes through, Misha would not be able to appoint the Prime Minister or government unilaterally should he decide to dismiss the government. If he does dismiss the current government, they would continue working until a new Parliament is elected and a new cabinet is approved by the new Parliament. On Tuesday, Misha met with local university students in Kutaisi, where he claimed that mass unemployment would result, quote, if they decided to take the parliament from Kutaisi, end quote.
Don't we have mass unemployment now?
Yeah, we already have mass
unemployment. We've always had it, right?
Right, yeah, but it would be, you know, like more mass, I guess.
Funny anecdote, the head of the Georgian National Communications Commission, who in his private capacity was involved in building the parliament, has been on a family vacation for the past 2 months, and apparently that's related to the construction of the parliament, or at least that's the speculation.
Interesting. Yeah, some accounts.
That there were like not all the bills in order and not all the finances in order.
Okay. So. Also, several people were fined 100 lari for throwing eggs at UNM MP Akaki Bobakhidze, Akominashvili, and Nugzar Tsiklauri after a discussion in Zugdidi about the constitutional changes.
Yeah, and I think it's a very aggressive environment often. There was, in one of these civil society engagement centers, there was, a political discussion about constitutional reform, and then there were people outside kind of protesting against the UNM people that were there and kind of threatening them.
Yeah.
And it's not a perfect political environment where officials and MPs have to...
You mean in general or in Zugdidi?
In general, I guess, but that's one of the symptoms.
Yeah,
that
for sure.
In such local meetings, you have these kind of heated protests.
Misha and B.I. met the old new year together at the Patriarch's office on Sunday night and Monday morning. When they were leaving, B.I. said to Ilya II on camera, and the video has been floating around Facebook, "Go see off the president. I know you love him more." Misha replied, "Why does he love me more?" A probably somewhat annoyed Ilya II didn't really say anything.
Yeah, and the pictures went kind of viral with them sitting on this small couch next to each other and kind of looking semi-comfortable.
The well-known 16-year-old Georgian jazz man, Beka Gociashvili, accused law enforcement of putting psychological pressure on him and his brother when they were summoned to testify as witnesses. The story is... Gociashvili and his friends were at a party at an older woman's flat. The next day, the cleaning lady discovered that a safe was missing. On Tuesday, the Ministry of Internal Affairs launched an internal investigation and today concluded that there was no pressure on Gociashvili. They noted that Gociashvili's father, who was at the police station, even invited officers who questioned his son to go to his son's concert.
Is that attempted bribery?
Who knows?
I don't know.
Gociashvili demands that the ministry release the audio recordings of the questioning. Shodena Sharvadashvili, editor of Leave It Ali magazine, wrote on her Facebook page that this was a very talented boy, and he was under the patronage of Nikush Rudua, the former minister of culture, and Ministry of Culture played a big role in his musical career. She said that it's possible that Gociashvili is paying back this debt. On a related note, a new procedure for questioning witnesses, which requires that they only be questioned in front of a judge, will be implemented in Georgia December 1st, 2013. Strange.
In front of a judge.
In front of a judge.
But you don't have, that would require probably a lot of judges.
Right? Yeah, a whole lot of judges. Man, not
to be
not
at
sure,
police stations
not sure
at
about
four
that.
In the morning.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, from what I heard, Gochiashvili, you know, that there was the way he was questioned. You know, he really was being sort of pressured. I mean, who knows why? I mean, he's 16 years old and goes to Juilliard in New York. It doesn't really make much sense. Former high-ranking officials at the Revenue Service were officially charged for a scheme to bankrupt BI's Kartu Bank. Former head of the Revenue Service, Jaba Ebanuidze, made a statement, quote, "I was charged with several things. I partly admitted to some of the charges, and the rest will be decided by court," end quote. Former Minister of Justice Zurabishvili was charged in absentia. No one has been detained yet. The court hearings could begin as early as tomorrow.
And Adeshvili is now on the Interpol list. And I think last week the justice minister made a statement alleging that he's in Budapest now.
Hanging out with Orban.
Maybe. I mean...
Yeah, it could be.
Interpol is a big step, I think. Then basically a government that finds him somewhere has to alert the Georgians about that.
Yeah, I mean, this Revenue Service situation is a little complicated. Jaba Ebanuidze is an extremely sharp guy who's done a lot for Georgia. Was very involved in the justice houses and the computerization of all of the document services and things like that. I find it unlikely that he was involved in too much. On the other hand, the process by which, you know, this law was passed, by which they stripped Kartu of its assets, was obviously an effort to just strip Kartu of its assets.
But that was not his fault. That was the parliament and the government.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how much he was involved. Yeah. It seems extremely unlikely that he was particularly involved in any of that stuff.
The big fines were brought down by, I think, the Chamber of Control, that was also alleging all the illegal party financing and all that. But I was not aware that the Revenue Service, So the change in the law meant that companies that had a loan from Kartu Bank that were found to have a tax debt to the government,
right,
you know, would be sent into bankruptcy, and then the government would get the assets and not Kartu Bank. So maybe he was involved in that way, that he declared bankruptcy over several.
I mean, Georgian legislation can be interpreted in such a way that, like, should people decide to find a tax debt of any value, they could do that.
You can find it under the cushion somewhere there.
Right. Energy Minister Kahi Kaladze stated on Friday that the government will put up 875,000 lari to subsidize electricity tariffs for Kakheti residents over the next 3 months because Kakheti Energy Distribution Company went bankrupt. Former public company, which serves over 100,000 people and is the only license-holding electricity company in the region, faced bankruptcy between 2005 and 2008, until it was privatized and sold to Energo Pro Georgia, colorful company. This sale was annulled because of a mistake in the document about the company's property. Later in 2008, the Lithuanian company Achema Group bought Kakheti Energy Distribution for 9.2 million lari, with an agreement that it invest 15 million between 2009 and 2013 to install individual meters in the region. In October of 2012, Achema also went bankrupt and failed to pay over 600 employees' salaries.
It's such a coincidence that it's just after the elections that this company went bankrupt.
Amazing. I wonder how that happened.
Yeah.
Georgia's prosecutor's office made an official visit to Interpol to stop the search for Vladimir Bedukadze, the man who released the scandalous Guldani prison videos just before the elections. Prosecutor's office explained that Bedukadze has expressed his readiness to cooperate with the investigation. Misha's initiative to increase pensions for the military and give pensions to deceased soldiers' families will be submitted to the government and the parliament. Defense Minister Irakli Alasania made a statement that a special governmental commission will prepare proposals so the government can defend veterans' rights at the legislative level.
Have we discussed Alasania's initiative to suspend the draft?
Yeah, exactly. That I wrote about that in my Kvitis Politra and Georgian Journal.
And now you're a big fan of the draft, right?
Well, what I said in this is that, you know, I think the draft, as it was done in Georgia, doesn't really make much sense, because I think that it can play a very positive role in sort of civic integration. I think that when there is a draft, and when the children or the sons of wealthy families serve alongside with those of the less wealthy and well-connected families, then it can sometimes prevent countries from going to war. In the United States, where it's a so-called all-volunteer army, which essentially means it's a paid army, you know, the kids of wealthy people do not serve for the most part. And so in Georgia, you know, people just didn't go to the, you know, the army. If you could get into university and afford it, you didn't go into the army. And so that sort of defeats its purpose. So I'm a fan of national service in general. I don't think that it should be required to be military, but if you spend a year cleaning hospitals or teaching in school or
helping people with kind of a health problem
or whatever. I mean, there's a lot of different things you can do for a year. I think that would be a good thing, especially if it brings people from different parts of the countries, different social backgrounds, different ethnic groups, different language groups, brings them all, you know, together. In an interview with the Georgian newspaper, Bidzina's favorite, Asavaldo Savaldi, former President Edward Shevardnadze said that Misha is losing influence in the country and in his own circle. He said that Misha, quote, is particularly dangerous now because his conduct is dictated by his hatred for BI. Shevardnadze affirmed that he knew even before the 2003 Rose Revolution that Misha was a very dangerous person, which is why he wanted Zuta Zhivanya to be his successor.
Did he ever set anything up about a successor? I mean,
No, but what he was going to do in Parliament, the whole reason that the Rose Revolution happened is because he was going to have, you know, probably Vajalord Kipanidze become the head of Parliament, replacing Nino Bourjanadze, and then set up a prime ministerial system so that he would have been prime minister. Which would have just been a mess, and Misha prevented him from doing that. While Zuta Zhivanya, who's a wonderful person and built the parliament and was a very, very steady hand on the helm, was much more conciliatory towards Shevardnadze much longer than Misha was. On Tuesday, Vano Medvedevsky, Secretary General of the United National Movement, declared that there is a budget crisis in Georgia because of the decrease in budget revenues due to the government's harassing of businesses and the suspension of infrastructure projects. He said that the new government is doing what hasn't been done since Chevy's time and forcing companies to pay taxes a month ahead, January taxes in December. Revenue Service denied this fact, as did the big auditing firms. Finance Minister Nodar Khaduri responded by saying there is no budgetary crisis in Georgia, and he expressed his readiness to debate Medvedevsky on TV. The debate will take place on Rustaviotti's position, hosted by journalist Nino Shubladze on January 22nd.
Yeah, as we have discussed earlier in previous editions of this show, one of my favorite projects in Georgia was suspended, you know, the lottery for the VAT receipts. And I, at least my personal experience is that you get much fewer receipts now in smaller stores especially. And I think that there is a chance that VAT revenue for the government will drop significantly compared to last year when people were collecting the receipts, meaning that every business was paying VAT to win in this kind of lottery where you get some cash prizes.
That could be. VAT is I don't know what the portion is, but it's a pretty big portion of the government.
Pretty big.
Government
because revenue. Half of the population doesn't pay income tax, as far as I know.
So. Right. UNM has called for Foreign Minister Maya Panjukidze to answer members of Parliament's questions regarding several of her recent statements, which, according to the UNM, demonstrate her incompetence. An Armenian website last week quoted her as saying that the Karabakh conflict can only be solved in favor of Azerbaijan's territorial integrity. Panjukidze called it an incorrect interpretation and claimed that she only reiterated Georgia's policy of recognizing Karabakh as part of Azerbaijan. Panjikidze also said she's ready to answer MPs' questions. Yeah, I saw the original statement that she made, and what she said was like nothing worth worrying about at all. That if she had been quoted accurately, would not have been a problem. I mean, that really was just National Movement MPs trying to make some noise. In my view,
yeah, I think the Georgian government has always been very careful with the Armenian-Azerbaijani relations because they have nothing to win by siding with one side or
absolutely,
the other.
Absolutely, and lots to lose. Georgian poet / goofball Rezo Amashukeli said in his interview with Georgian magazine Reitingi. No, there is a Georgian magazine called the Reitingi.
Ratings, I guess.
Exactly.
In Georgian.
Quote, "If it will continue like this, Georgians will unintentionally turn to Russia. I've lived in a period when Georgia was dependent on Russia, and at least nobody forced me to marry my male cousin."
Oh, that's what's happening
I'm sure you are dependent on Russia, buddy.
No, but no.
Due to politics in recent... Sorry, I'm back quoting. "Due to politics in recent years, our country has become full of gays and lesbians. There are many gays in the government as well, not only in their sexual orientation, but also their spirituality." Meaning their spiritual gays or lesbians or something. I don't know, you know. Are they spiritually... Yeah, who knows?
I think there's a reason why nobody knows Reitingi and why nobody needs to know Reitingi.
Right, and why nobody reads Rezo Amashukeli's poems. Thanks for your input on that one, Rezo. The Natural Resource Agency will be removed from the Energy Ministry and merged with the Environment Ministry in accordance with legislation submitted to Parliament Monday, as it was before it was changed, I don't know, whatever it was, a year and a half ago. On Tuesday, Justice Minister Tsoulikiani stated that Mestia will have a notary in the near future. Tsoulikiani said that it currently has no notary, so residents have to travel to other areas.
That's interesting, because notaries seem to be everywhere in Georgia.
Yeah, everywhere in Tbilisi.
In every dark corner in some hallway, there's a notary hidden.
Yeah, well, the notary law is quite complicated, and how, you know, what they can charge for this and that. A lot of things require notary services, which has... some real disadvantages, because it's just a real pain to go to notary's offices all the time.
And also, they don't really verify anything. They just, like, put a stamp on it and take the fee. Like, there's not much of a verification of anything.
Well, I think there's some verification. I don't know. Maybe I'm just using the uptight notaries.
And yeah, I'm using the dark corner
you know,
ones.
The casual ones. But, on the other hand, I mean, they're inexpensive. And so, I don't know, maybe it, saves some funds.
Agriculture.
Okay, agriculture. No, we already talked about this.
Yeah, right.
So Tbilisi City Hall is allegedly planning to build a mini city on the Tbilisi Sea for some 126,000 Chinese people. Plan is linked to the Youth Olympics program that will use the Olympic Village for the athletes. The mini city will include housing, industry services, hotels, and casinos. Chinese investors have already invested $150 million in the project. On Saturday, the Ministry of Economy, Georgi Kudikashvili, stated that Georgia and Russian authorized vehicular traffic between the two countries. However, a visa problem still exists. Kudikashvili said, quote, "Regretfully, our carriers have to hire drivers who have Russian visas," end quote. Last Thursday, Foreign Minister Maya Panjikidze announced that cargo monitoring will be established on the Russian-Georgian border, namely at the Zemo, Larsi, Roki, and Pasu border crossings. This means that Georgia will now control the cargo entering those territories. Hmm. Great. It's sort of funny that they say will be established and that they're actually doing the driving now. Like, why wouldn't they do those at the same time? But
right now, isn't there also already some Georgian goods going back to Russia? I read somewhere that the citrus fruits are now no longer on the blacklist in Russia, so Georgian mandarins can apparently be exported to Russia again, which was not possible for a while because of our friend in the Russian government who is the food safety guy.
Oh, that guy. Oh, my God.
That found the poisonous things in Borjomi and in all Georgian red wine.
Yeah, he's
in everything Georgian.
As they say, he's a specific case. Tbilisi City Hall plans to spend 9 million lari to modernize 14 subway trains. They also warn that Georgian Water and Power that it has to secure a 24-hour water supply for all of the city and threatens to use all lawful means against the company should they fail to do so. Earlier this week, Georgian Water and Power responded to the warning saying that they had implemented this within the agreed-upon city's 2006 borders.
I had also never heard that before, that the City Hall actually put the, you know, the fist on the table and said, you know, like, improve water supply.
Exactly. One good way to start with Georgian Water and Power would be to figure out who owns it, like, you know, so that people could figure out who actually, you know, the owners are.
And why it was given in 2006 by Tbilisi City Hall to the third highest or fourth highest bidder in a competitive bidding process where you had several Western companies, companies bidding for it.
That were very, very interested in that. And as a resident of Tatsminda, the most beautiful part of Tbilisi, and also the one with the crummiest and most irregular water supply, I can assure you that there is not
a secure, power and
internet. And power and everything else. There is not a 24-hour water supply. Georgia ranks 21st among 177 countries in the Heritage Foundation Index of Economic Freedom. The country has improved its management of public finances, investment freedom, and property rights since a year ago. Yeah, Heritage
Whatever.
Foundation. Yeah, whatever. Exactly. Ajara TV has a new director, Soso Studua. No idea if he's related to Robico. He used to head several TV projects on Channel 1. Studua said he plans to reorganize the station and turn it into a real public TV channel.
Yes, Ajara TV is this weird leftover station that is part of the regional government of Ajara and is not supposed to exist anyways, but they're still around. And now there's a big debate in Ajara whether this should become, you know, part of the Georgian public broadcaster or not. And the national government wants that reform to happen so that, in line with the law, Ajara TV is really a publicly accountable station, not a state-controlled broadcaster. But the Ajara government really wants to keep it under its control. And
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Following up on last week's story about two organizations winning a million lari from Misha's reserve fund after a whopping six-day competition.
Over the holidays.
Yeah, over the holidays, 6 days from announcement to closing the thing. As was mentioned, one of them was Giannotti's Caucasus Institute for Peace, Democracy, and Development. The second winner, which we sort of glossed over, was Zaza Dadaseli's Journalism Development Fund with Rusudan Kervilashvili as one of the board members. Kervilashvili was Zaza's wife and deputy chairperson of parliament. She and her sister, Maya Archelashvili's, are connected with the building company Centerpoint, which promised apartments to 6,200 families and instead stole $310 million. There's not anybody in Georgia, or certainly
who's
in
Tbilisi, better place to,
that doesn't know somebody who lost money in that whole deal. The hardest working NGO in Georgia, Transparency International Georgia, has done some excellent work in finding out the deal there. And it really was Kervilashvili who was the sort of Krisha for all of that. I mean, it really is amazing that
she has never been held accountable for that.
She has not been held accountable, nor has Vakhtang Archelashvili, who is still floating around town. Investor.ge reported in their December-January issue that the American poet Lynn Coffin is translating Georgian poetry into English in collaboration with Georgian translators. The book, scheduled for release in early 2013, will include the works of Shoto Rustaveli, Galaktion Tavidze, and David Barbakadze. The 69-year-old Long Island native has used her talents on translations of Czech, Mongolian, and Russian poetry, in addition to composing her own works of poetry, fiction, and nonfiction. Her translation of Rustaveli's Night in the Tiger Skin is planned for release in 2014.
And at some point last year, there's also, in the UK, a book was published that is called, I think, Best of Georgian Fiction. Something like that. And so people translated a lot of short stories from famous Georgian writers into English. If you go online, you can find an ebook version of that. It's
an ebook, a Kindle version.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's also in print, but you can get it electronically.
Oh, wow.
Because there's not much translation of all the famous poets and writers in Georgia that all the Georgians know, but the foreigners often have no idea why everything is, you know, Rustaveli and Shevchevadze and, oh,
for
and
sure.
all these people.
Well, I read some of Ms. Coffin's poems, and I mean, some of the translations, and they're not bad. I mean, I can't judge how accurate they are, but I mean, as a poet, she's pretty good compared to a lot of the other translations I've read. And I still think, until her comes out, for those who want to read Night in the Tiger Skin, that the Waldorf prose translation is still the best of Rustaveli.
But they're hard to get. They're not easy.
They are hard to get. I mean, they haven't been printed in a while. Somebody ought to get the British Georgian Society working on that. A nice reprint available in Georgia of the Waldorf's view there, because I think it was their 100th something recently. There was some discussion about that in the UK. On Monday, Parliament resumed sessions. Yesterday, the Parliament adopted a jury court initiative of for former senior officials.
MP. I think they introduced it. They haven't adopted it yet.
Oh, they introduced it. Okay.
I think they started discussing that.
Member of Parliament, Kovit Davidashvili, is proposing amendments to the law on lotteries and gambling, which would restrict the advertising of gambling games, including during commercials.
That would hurt Kizrashvili, who owns both the Georgian lotteries and the company, the advertising company, Outdoor GE.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there's...
I think it's a social problem.
It's a huge social problem, especially the internet gambling and things like that. I'm not adverse to that. I mean, an enormous portion of the advertising going on in the city is going on, from those companies, and that's going right to outdoor.ge.
And I mean, all these websites, these betting websites, poker websites, I mean, there's like, you know, they're somewhere in an offshore entity, and there's no proof that, you know, they're not stealing your money. I mean, they are stealing your money, but that they're not just a fraud.
Absolutely. Lawmakers will continue to work in the extraordinary session until the end of the week. If you want up-to-date information on what's going on in Parliament, sign up for TI Georgia's free text messaging service by going to parliament.transparency.ge/subscribe. This week's GeoCapital number is 78.5, which is the percentage of Georgians who agree or strongly agree with the statement that work should come first, even if it means less spare time. Only 5.8% of Georgians disagree or strongly disagree with the statement. In the United States, only 32% of people believe that work should come first, while in Japan, this number is even lower at 20.5%. To put this in perspective, in Jordan, it's 91%, in Rwanda, 92%, and Egypt, 94%. Say that work should come first.
Is that, I mean, you know, that might be my naive cliche, and, you know, I'm apologizing for my stereotypes, but my impression is always that the work ethic in a country like Japan would put work above private life. Maybe a little bit in the US as well. While in Egypt, I'm not a Middle East expert, but I'm not sure if in Egypt work comes
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's wishful thinking by the hardworking nations and, hypocrisy by the more laid-back nations. Who knows? Wouldn't want to speculate on that. This week's Kolga movies are Pina tomorrow on Friday, 8 o'clock. Monday, The Untouchables from 2011. Again on Wednesday, The Untouchables. All movies are at 8 p.m. Donkino across from Rustaveli Metro and cost 7 lotti. That's it for this week. My Twitter address is at TXTBUK. Our email address is tbilpod@gmail.com, or post to the forum on our website, www.tbilpod.com. This week, we will finish with the 1993 Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Mary Jane's Last Dance.
Tall and she grew up right with them Indiana boys on an Indiana night. Well, she moved down here at the age of 18. She blew the boys away, it was more than they'd seen. I was introduced and then we both started grooving. She said, I dig you, baby, but I got to keep moving. One more time to kill the pain. I feel something creeping in and I'm tired of this town slowed down, you never grow old. I'm tired of screwing up, I'm tired of going down, I'm tired of myself, I'm tired of this town. Oh my, my, oh hell yes, honey, put on that party dress. Buy me a drink, sing me a song, take me as I come, cause I can't stay long. Last dance with Mary Jane, one more time to kill the pain. Standing in her underwear, looking down from a hotel room. The nightfall will be coming soon. Oh my, my,